Hold your fire, boys!
Smoke herded his prisoner out of the tree. Pearly took hold of the unconscious man's feet and dragged him into the open.
Mr. Jensen, is that you?
That's right, Slowfoot. Come on out. Or do you need help? Are you wounded?
The tall, skinny cowboy limped out of the trees carrying his rifle.
Nah, I'm fine. Did you get those Jaspers who had me pinned down?
They're right here.
What are you gonna do with them?
The same thing any honest man would do with rustlers and murderers. String them up.
Murderers? You mean that Barstow kid who got ventilated?
Dead.
Yeah, the poor kid bled to death before anybody could get him back to the ranch house. That makes it murder, sure enough. Want me to fetch my lasso, Smoke?
That'll be fine. And bring mine, too. We'll find a tree with a good branch and have both of these bastards dancing on air before you know it.
You can't do that. We're entitled to a trial.
It just so happens I brought a dozen men with me tonight. That's the right number for a jury. We'll have a trial if you want, and I'll be the judge and pass the sentence when you're found guilty.
Seems like a waste of time to me. I'll be back in a minute with them lassos and the rest of the fellas.
Look, you don't have to kill me, Mr. Jensen. Just give me my horse and I'll ride on. And I give you my word, I'll never set foot in this part of the country again. You can shoot me on sight if I do.
I can shoot you right now if I want to, but I'd rather see you hang.
I didn't kill anybody, I swear it. I didn't fire a shot tonight.
You were shooting at me, damn it.
Well, I meant when we were driving off those cows. That's all I did. Some of the other boys handled all the gunplay. I'm not responsible for that cowboy getting killed.
You were part of it. To my way of thinking, that makes you just as guilty as the man who pulled the trigger.
No, you can't.
There might be something you can do.
Anything you want, Jensen.
Tell me where the rest of the bunch was taking those cows.
I can't. The boss would...
Kill you? What in blazes do you think is fixing to happen to you here? You can talk, or you can kick your life out at the end of a hang rope. The choice is up to you.
That rustler didn't say anything. His fear of the man he worked for had to be pretty strong to make him clam up in the face of a necktie party. While they were waiting for Pearly, Smoke drew Slewfoot aside.
Listen, Slewfoot, don't show any reaction to what I'm about to tell you, okay?
Sure, Mr. Jensen.
Steve Barstow is actually still alive. I'm just throwing a scare into this bushwhacker.
Slewfoot looked relieved, but he didn't do anything else except nod slightly. Pearly came back a few minutes later, along with the rest of the group from the Sugar Loaf. The other riders all dismounted and formed a circle of grim faces. Now there were a dozen men surrounding the prisoners.
Oh, all right. I'll tell you what you want to...
The other rustler, who it appeared to still be out cold from the blow Pearly landed, must have been shamming, because he had lunged up from the ground, yanked a six-gun from the nearest cowboy's holster, and fired at the chest of the man Smoke had been questioning. The gunman tried to swing the revolver towards Smoke, but Smoke's Colt was already in his hand. The bullet ripped through his throat and made blood spurt from severed arteries. The rustler clapped his hands to his throat, but there was no way he could stop the blood of crimson. Smoke knew that man was dead. Smoke leaped to the side of the first rustler, dropping to one knee. The man had his hands pressed to his chest. Dark worms of blood crawled between his splayed fingers.
Your partner shot you because he knew you were about to talk, but you can still tell me what you wanted me to know. Where will we find the cattle your bunch stole?
I didn't kill nobody.
Don't worry about that now. Just tell me where the rest of the gang went.
Through the tunnel.
The man's head fell to the side.
He's dead, Smoke.
Yeah, and I'd already figured out those stolen cows must have gone through the tunnel we saw. But that doesn't tell me where they wound up.
Yeah, we got a place to start looking, though. Danged if I ever heard of a tunnel running through Gunsight Ridge.
Me neither. While we're doing that, some of you fellas search these men. See if they have anything in their pockets that might tell us where they came from.
Pearly Cal and Steve Barstow accompanied Smoke as he headed for the tunnel. When they reached the dark opening, Cal fashioned a torch from several broken pine boughs that he lashed together with a piggin string he took from his pocket. He lit the makeshift torch with a sulfur match, and when the brand was burning brightly, he held it over his head to light their way as the men started into the tunnel. This tunnel didn't go down below the surface, though. It bored straight through the ridge.
Cal, hold that torch close to one of the walls. I don't think this passage was man-made. I think an underground river used to run through here, before whatever earthquake thrust the ridge up thousands of years ago.
Why ain't nobody ever seen it before? I've ridden along this stretch of Gunsight Ridge dozens of times. I would have noticed it.
Not if it was covered up and you weren't looking for it. I think a rock slide must have plugged up the entrance some long while ago. But then somebody came along, found the other end of the tunnel, followed it this far, and realized that if he could just break through the rocks, he'd have a back door onto Sugarloaf Range that nobody else knew about.
Pretty smart. So then the fella decided to use the tunnel to drive off stolen cows.
That's the way it looks to me.
The tunnel was big enough for that. It was about 30 feet wide, and the arched ceiling rose about 20 feet. The floor was stone, so there weren't any tracks to prove that the rustled cattle had come through here. But they had the declaration of a dying man and the fact that there was no other place cows could have gone. The smoothness of the walls, ceiling, and floor was what told Smoke the tunnel had been formed by flowing water instead of being chipped out by tools in the hands of men. No telling how far back in the past that had been, he mused as he stood there looking around in the light of the torch Cal held.
Reckon we can pick up the trail again at the other end?
That's what I'm hoping. Go back and get the other men and the horses. One more thing, Steve. I want you to ride back to the ranch.
I've been keeping up all right, haven't I, Mr. Jensen? Why are you sending me back?
You've kept up just fine, but there's no telling how far this chase is going to lead us, and you'll need some rest if that arm is going to heal properly. Besides, I've got a couple of chores for you. I want you to tell Mrs. Jensen what we found. She needs to know it may be a spell before we get back. Also, I want you to get word to Monte Carson in Big Rock about this tunnel.
I reckon I can take care of those things for you, Mr. Jensen. What do you expect the sheriff to do about this tunnel?
I don't think there's anything he really can do about it, but he needs to know it's here. When we get back, I may do something about it, though. Some dynamite ought to close it up permanent-like. I don't care for the idea of there being a hidden back door to Sugarloaf like this.
Neither do I. It's too tempting for thieves of every stripe.
All right. I'd rather come with you and settle a score with those wide loopers, though.
It'll get settled, Steve.
Once Steve Barstow had started back to the ranch house with his messages for Sally and Sheriff Monte Carson, Smoke and the rest of the men led their horses into the tunnel. They could have ridden. The ceiling was plenty high enough for that. But Smoke wanted to take it slow and easy as they made their way through the ridge. They could only see as far ahead of them as the flickering light from the torches they carried would reach. There was no telling what they might run into. The darkness closed in behind them just as thick and stifling as it was in front of them. And as they went deeper into the tunnel, Smoke thought about the millions of tons of rock just above their heads. He didn't believe the tunnel was in any danger of collapsing. It had been here for thousands of years after all, but that much weight looming over a man made him think, no matter how much he believed the path he followed was safe. Smoke wasn't the only one who was a little nervous.
I don't much cotton to dark holes like this. They give me the fantides.
There's nothing to worry about. You're as safe as if you were sleeping in your own bunk. Wait a minute. You've fallen out of your bunk while you were asleep before, haven't you?
Dadgummit, I was having a nightmare, and you know it. Don't go making sport of me about that, Cal.
I remember it now. You were hollering, "Don't let it get me, boys! Don't let it get me!" what was chasing you, Pearly? It must have been something pretty bad to have you running in your sleep like that. A bear, maybe? Or a mountain lion?
None of your doggone business, youngster. My dreams is private.
Yeah, and that's probably a good thing, too.
Stay alert. Could be walking right into trouble.
If we do, we'll give them varmints more hell than they figured on.
The half mile or so seemed much longer, and what felt like an hour passed before the men from Sugarloaf reached the other end. Smoke felt relief go through him as he spotted an irregular circle of grayish light ahead of him. He knew that was starlight coming through the opening of the tunnel.
Put out those torches. We'll wait a minute to let our eyes adjust before we step out of the tunnel.
The cowboys dropped the torches on the rock floor and stomped them out. What seemed like impenetrable darkness closed in around them like a shroud. It didn't last long, though. Smoke's vision compensated for the lack of torchlight, and he was able to see the mouth of the tunnel even better now. He could even make out the tunnel's curving walls.
Follow me.
Smoke started forward, still leading the Palouse. When he reached the tunnel's mouth, he signaled a halt.
I'll go out there and take a look around.
Well, I'm coming with you.
No, you're not. You're staying here in case you need to take charge.
You mean in case some of the skunks are waiting out there and they kill you? That ain't never gonna happen.
I appreciate the vote of confidence, but I'm not bulletproof, Pearly. And I've got the scars to prove it. Just stay here while I do a little scouting.
Still say you ought to send somebody who ain't important, like Cal here.
Save the squabbling for later. I'll be back.
Smoke handed his horse's reins to Slewfoot, drew his revolver, and glided out into the darkness. Only it wasn't as dark now as it had been. Smoke glanced up at the sky, which was turning gray back beyond the ridge. The sun would be coming up in another hour or so. The tunnel opened onto a long, brush-dotted slope that led down to a broad valley running north and south. Smoke had been over here on this side of the Gunside Ridge before, of course. He'd been all over this part of Colorado. But to get here, he had gone the long way around. That tunnel cut 10 miles, hell, maybe more, off the journey. About 15 miles north of here, the mountains that formed the valley petered out, dropping down to some broad flats with a small river flowing through them. A settlement known as Bitter Springs was located there. It didn't amount to much. General store, couple of saloons, a blacksmith and a livery stable, and a few more businesses, but it was common knowledge that men on the dodge could stop there without having to worry about the law. The sheriff's office at the county seat was a long way off, and deputies hardly ever got up that way. Buyers who didn't care too much about where merchandise came from could pick up some pretty good deals in Bitter Springs, too. Cattle, horses, guns, wagons, mining equipment, anything with a value on it was traded there, and nobody asked any questions. It was a perfect place for the rustlers to dispose of the stock they had driven through the tunnel from the Sugarloaf. As the light of approaching dawn grew stronger, Smoke ventured down the slope and studied the rocky ground. He saw tracks here and there, enough of them to confirm that the stolen herd had been driven down into the valley. Satisfied that they were on the right trail, he returned to the tunnel.
No bushwhackers out there?
I didn't see any, and nobody took a shot at me. My hunch is that whoever is ramrodding those rustlers thinks that nobody else has any idea this tunnel is here.
I reckon he was right about that, until tonight.
Yeah, I found enough tracks to know that they drove our stock down into that valley below us. I don't know which way they went, but we ought to be able to follow them. I wouldn't be surprised if they were bound for Bitter Springs.
That little wide place in the trail up north of here? Yeah, that makes sense. Plenty of hombres up there would be willing to buy some stolen cattle and try to make some fast dinero on them.
Smoke led the way down the slope toward the valley. They hadn't brought along any supplies, so they weren't equipped for a long chase. However, if the trail led farther than Bitter Springs, they could pick up some provisions there. Smoke's instinct told him that that wasn't going to be necessary. He was convinced they would find the men they were looking for at the settlement. At the base of the trail leading down from the tunnel, the tracks of Smoke's stolen cattle turned north, just as he'd expected. The eastern sky continued to lighten, and eventually the sun peeked over Gunside Ridge, flooding the valley with golden and rosy-hued light. The glow made the valley, which was rocky and choked with brush in many places, look more attractive than it really was. This was mediocre rangeland in contrast to the much better graze only a couple of miles away on the other side of the ridge. But people were always hungry for land, so several small outfits had been established there. Smoke and his companions passed some scrawny cows cropping in bunch grass. They didn't see any cowboys tending to them. Those animals would be allowed to run mostly wild in the brush until it came roundup time again. A couple of hours after the sun came up, Pearlie pointed up a little draw to the left.
Looks like there's a house up yonder. You want to stop and talk to the folks, Smoke?
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. We might find out a little more about what we'll be facing when we get to Bitter Springs.
They turned their horses and rode along the twist and draw. After 100 yards, a crude log cabin came into view, with smoke wafting up from the stone chimney at one end of the structure. They could see no barn, but there was a small shed and a pole corral off to one side of the cabin.
Pearlie, Cal, you come with me. The rest of you fellas wait here. It might spook whoever lives in that cabin if they see a whole gang of men riding up.
We don't want nobody getting an itchy trigger finger.
The three of them trotted their horses toward the cabin, slowing the mounts to a walk when they came within 100 yards. Smoke's keen eyes searched the place. He hadn't seen any sign of movement so far.
I ain't much liking the looks of this, Smoke. Reminds me a couple times down in Texas when I come up on places where the Comanche had been. I got spooked off for some reason before they had a chance to burn the houses down. Everybody there was dead, though. Men, women, kids. They even killed the livestock.
I don't see any bodies. It looks to me like there's a milk cow in the shed that's still alive.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But if the folks this place belongs to ain't dead, where are they?
He got his answer almost immediately when one of the shutters over the lone window opened. Somebody thrust out a rifle barrel.
Oh, damn it!
Pearlie bent lower in his saddle. His hand reached toward his gun.
Hold it!
Smoke stretched out a hand toward Pearlie and gestured for him not to draw the weapon. The foreman stopped his draw with obvious reluctance. All three of them had pulled their horses to a stop in response to the shot.
Don't come any closer, or the next one won't miss.
That fella needs to have a lesson taught to him. Somebody who owns a little greasy sack outfit like this has got no right.
He's got every right. The same rights we do. More in this case, because this is his land, not ours.
Well, yeah, I reckon that's true. But I don't like being shot at, and I sure don't like being shot at and not shooting back.
Just take it easy. To stay here.
You better not get any closer, Smoke. That hombre's liable to drill you next time, like you threatened.
He sounded loco enough to do it.
I don't think so. Just because he's a little spooked doesn't mean he really wants to kill anybody.
It doesn't mean he won't.
You two stay where you are.
Smoke heeled the Palouse into a walk and carried him slowly and deliberately toward the cabin. This time, the bullet kicked up dirt 10 yards in front of Smoke's horse.
We don't mean you any harm, mister. We just wanted to talk to you, that's all.
I got nothing to say to you, dirty coyotes. We had a deal, and you busted it.
We don't have any deal. We've never even met before.
Smoke had kept the Palouse moving while he talked. Now he was within 50 feet of the cabin. He could see a narrow slice of face through the gap between the shutters.
Listen, I promise you we're not who you think we are, and we don't mean you any harm.
You think I'm gonna believe that lie after what happened to my Sarah Beth?
Smoke reined in and shook his head.
I don't know what you're talking about, mister. It's been more than a year since I've been in this valley. I didn't even know there was a spread here.
You ain't part of that no-good bunch who's been driving cattle up the valley to Bitter Springs?
They're the varmints I'm looking for. If you have a grudge against them, then we should be friends, because so do I. Those were my cattle they stole.
Well, then you just stay right there. Just don't move.
Fine.
The rancher withdrew the rifle, but he did not close the shutter. Instead, he disappeared. But a moment later, a different face peered out through the gap. Smoke couldn't be sure, but he thought this one belonged to a woman. Sensing that she was studying it, he remained still in the saddle, let her take a good look. A minute or so went by, and then she withdrew from the window. After another minute, the cabin door swung open, and a tall, raw-boned man stepped outside. He still had the rifle in his hands, but he was pointing it toward the ground now.
My daughter says you ain't one of the polecats who chased her. She couldn't see your friends back yonder quite as well, but she didn't think they was part of the bunch neither.
They weren't, I can promise you that. When did it happen?
Early this morning, just before sun come up. Our milk cow got loose and strayed off up the draw into the valley. She done that before. Sarah Beth went looking for her, and she saw a herd of cows being driven north. Three fellas who were with the herd spotted her and come after her on horseback, whooping and hollering. Vile, nasty things they yelled at her, too. And I ain't doubting for a second that if they caught her, they would have done everything they threatened to.
You're probably right. I'm sorry that happened. My friends and I didn't have anything to do with it, though.
Well, I reckon I believe you. Are you really Smoke Jensen?
I am.
Well, come on in, then, and the rest of your bunch is welcome, too. Yeah, we ain't got much, but I can have Sarah Beth put on a pot of coffee, and you're welcome to water your horses.
We're much obliged to you for your hospitality, Mr.
Hannon. Ezra Hannon. I'm sorry for taking those pot shots at you.
You were spooked. Given the circumstances, I don't blame you. Likely I would have been, too.
With everything I heard about you, I reckon he'd take the devil his own self to spook you, Mr. Jensen. And that's just what you're liable to find if you're headed to Bitter Springs.
Ezra Hannon, who had been operating this ranch for the past year, with the help of his daughter, Sarah Beth, and a single hired hand, a Mexican who lived in a jacal farther up the draw, had struck an uneasy truce with the rustlers. Hannon had encountered them driving Sugarloaf cattle up the valley the last time they had struck Smoke's herd, and the men had warned Hannon that they would kill him and his daughter if he told anyone about what he'd seen.
But you're telling me.
They said they'd leave me and Sarah Beth and Pablo alone if we did like they told us. Far as I'm concerned, they broke the deal first. Anyway, now that you're on their trail, I don't figure I'll have to worry. You'll wipe that sorry bunch right off the face of the earth.
I plan on getting my cattle back, that's for sure.
Smoke smiled at the young woman who handed him a cup of coffee.
Thank you, Sarah Beth.
She wasn't much more than a girl. Still pretty, even though the hard frontier life was starting to put hollows under her eyes and lines on her face that shouldn't have been there on someone not yet out of her teens. She still looked shaken from her experience early that morning.
How did you get away from the men who chased you?
I know a hiding place. Little hole in the side of a gully. I pulled some brush over it and they couldn't even tell I was there.
Yeah, that was quick thinking. Ezra, how come you knew who I am without me telling you?
Shoot, you reckon there's anybody in this part of the country who ain't heard of Smoke Jensen? Probably everybody west of the Mississippi knows who you are, and plenty east of there, too. When you get right down to it, we're neighbors.
That's true. We just got that big old ridge between us.
Well, that ain't all, Mr. Jensen. When I was hiding from those fellas this morning, I heard them talking about you.
What'd they say?
They were mighty pleased with themselves. Rustling cattle from somebody famous like you, They said you'd never find out how they were getting the cows off your range.
That was mighty confident of them.
How do they get those cows over the ridge? Well, I didn't think there was any way.
They didn't bring the cattle over the ridge. There's a tunnel through it, an old underground river from the looks of it. The far end of it was sealed off until recently. I'm pretty sure of that.
A tunnel? Well, I never saw anything like that.
It's 3 or 4 miles south of here, at the top of a rocky slope.
Oh, well, that explains it. My range don't run that far, so I don't have any call to go down yonder. Although, I've been down there a few times looking for stock that strayed. You'd think I would have seen it.
Eh, you'd think so. But maybe this end of it was covered up until recently, too.
Pa, you think this has anything to do with that blasting?
You know, you might be right.
Blasting? Somebody was using dynamite down there?
Yeah, a couple of months ago. We heard the explosion sounded like thunder, but there wasn't a cloud in the sky.
Did you ever see anybody or have any idea what was going on?
Nope. Just heard those big old booms.
That was something to think about. Who in these parts had been using dynamite a couple of months ago? Smoke had a hunch that when he found out the answer, he'd also find the kingpin behind the rustling. Smoke and his men were on their way again before midday, leaving the Hannon Ranch behind them. At the lead, Cal rode beside Smoke and Pearlie.
That Sarah Beth gal is sort of pretty.
Ooh, sweet on her, are you? I'm sure her pa would let you marry her. He'd get an unpaid ranch hand out of the deal to help him run that little greasy sack outfit.
Dadgummit, nobody said anything about getting married. Anyway, I'm too young to get married. I still got too many wild oats to sow. I reckon a lunkhead like you wouldn't know anything about that.
Son, I sowed more wild oats than you'll ever see in your life.
It was mid-afternoon when they reached the flats, and not long after that, the buildings of the settlement came into view ahead. They formed a single block, scattered somewhat irregularly along both sides of what passed for a street. As the riders entered the town, Cal looked around and started reading some of the signs.
McKendry's Mercantile and Trading Post. McKendry's Saloon. McKendry's Livery Stable. Looks like one family owns just about everything in town.
Or one man.
The store was the biggest building. It and the two saloons all sported false fronts. The rest were drab, single-story structures built of weather-faded wood. There was a cafe to the right, across from the livery stable, that did not sport the McKendry name on its sign, which read simply, Bitter Springs Cafe. A couple of men sat on a bench on the store's front porch. Smoke sensed their eyes following the newcomers. Over at the McKendry Saloon, a man rested his forearms on the top of the bat wings in the doorway and peered over him as smoke curled from a thin black cigarillo clamped between his teeth. Smoke figured there were a number of other eyes watching him as they rode along the street as well. He dismounted and looped the Palouse's reins around a hitch rack that leaned like it would fall over in a strong wind. Pearlie and the other men swung down from the saddles as well.
We all going in?
Why don't a couple of you stay out here and keep an eye on things? I know you're all hungry since we didn't have any breakfast or lunch, but I'll have somebody else spell you as soon as they've eaten.
Now stay.
Same here.
Thanks, boys.
The others trooped inside. Bitter Springs Cafe did not look like it did a lot of business. The windows weren't particularly clean, and the curtains that hung over them were dusty. Half a dozen tables covered with blue check cloth sat to the left with a lunch counter and stool on the right. A board on the wall behind the counter had the menu scrawled on it. At the only occupied table sat a youngish, sandy-haired man in a tweed suit and a string tie. but he wasn't eating. He had a lot of papers spread out on the tablecloth in front of him, and he was marking on some of them with the stub of a pencil. Another man had taken one of the chairs from the same table and pulled it over next to the wall, where he sat with the chair tipped back and a Mexican sombrero pulled down over his face. He seemed to be asleep. The third and final man in the cafe stood behind the counter. The apron he wore told Smoke he was probably the proprietor. Given the lack of business, he was most likely the cook, too, and swept out the place in the morning along with every other chore that needed to be done, which wouldn't be easy because the man only had one arm. The empty left sleeve of his shirt was pinned up. He was stocky and florid-faced with gray hair and a mustache. He gave Smoke and the other men a nod.
Howdy, boys. You come for lunch? I don't get many customers this time of day, but I got a pot of stew still on the stove.
Stew will be fine, especially if you've got coffee to wash it down with.
I sure do. Sit anywhere you want. I'll bring your food and coffee to you.
Just set it on the counter. We'll get it.
Suit yourself. Don't let the fact that I'm a cripple bother you, though. I'm used to it. Don't even think about it anymore. Cannonball took this left arm of mine clean off at Antietam, you know. Like to bled to death before they got me to the field hospital. Came pretty close to dying there, too. Downright nasty places, hospitals.
The man sitting at the table glanced up. Light from outside reflected on the lenses of the spectacles he wore.
Joe has a talkative nature, indicative of the fact that he doesn't see very many people. I think Esteban and I are his only regular customers these days.
That ain't strictly true, Dr. Kingston. This little mouse comes in here just about every day looking for something to eat. He ain't much for paying his bill, though.
Smoke nodded to Pearlie and the other men, indicating that they should sit down. He went over to the table where Kingston sat and held out his hand.
Name's Jensen.
Dr. Charles Kingston.
The other man rose to his feet and shook hands. He was an inch or two taller than Smoke, with broad shoulders under the brown tweed coat.
You're a medical man, are you?
Oh, no, I'm not that sort of doctor. I'm a geologist. I work for a mining company back east.
This isn't really mining country.
Not at the moment, no. But perhaps it will be, someday. My job is to search for areas that hold the potential for future endeavors.
You think there might be gold or silver around here that nobody's found yet?
Or copper or zinc or any number of other elements that might prove profitable. I'll admit, though, that my reports haven't been promising so far.
Joe started setting bowls of stew and cups of coffee he had filled on the counter. Smoke's men helped themselves.
I guess I'd better get some of that food while there's still enough to go around.
Why don't you come back and join me, Mr. Jensen? You strike me as an educated man. There aren't an abundance of them around here. No offense, Joe.
No, I ain't offended. I can read and write and cipher, but the things you talk about are as far over my head as Pike's Peak, Doc.
Smoke got a bowl of stew and some coffee and carried him back over to Kingston's table. He pulled out a chair with his foot and sat down.
You're wrong about me being an educated man, Doctor. At least if you're talking about formal schooling. I've learned a lot from friends of mine, though. I used to know a fellow who could quote for hours from Shakespeare and Homer, and if you wanted to talk philosophy or natural history, he was your man. Used to be a professor back east before he decided he liked fur trapping better. Not to mention the fact that I'm married to a schoolteacher. I reckon that's an education in itself.
I expect you're right about that. Do you know anything about geology, Mr. Jensen?
Dirt and rocks, things like that. Only what I've learned by riding over them. And sleeping on them some nights.
It's a fascinating subject. You can find almost every different sort of geological formation here in Colorado.
I imagine you can. The state's got all sorts of territory in it. What do you do? Go around digging holes?
Or blowing them out with dynamite.
Then that was you doing the blasting about 15 miles down the valley a while back.
I didn't trespass on your land, did I? I was told that most of the valley is open range and...
No, I just heard somebody talking about it. We're not from around here.
I see. Well, in that case, yes, I did some excavating in that area. But, as I said, the results weren't promising.
Uncover anything unusual, even if it wasn't gold or silver?
Not really.
Smoke nodded and started eating the stew. So far, the conversation had been casual, but his brain was working furiously, considering the possibilities. Dr. Charles Kingston didn't seem like the type of hombre who'd be running a gang of wide loopers, but there was a good chance Kingston had uncovered that tunnel through Gunside Ridge with his blasting. Now, that didn't mean he had to be tied in with the rustlers, because somebody else could have come along and found the tunnel mouth after one of Kingston's explosions revealed it.
Did you happen to see anybody bringing a herd of cattle through here earlier today?
No, but I haven't been here all day. Esteban and I just got back not long ago ourselves. I was checking out some hills to the east. Esteban's my assistant, by the way. He drives the wagon and helps load and unload the equipment.
Smoke glanced at the Mexican, who still appeared to be asleep. Well, the man could have been pretending, of course. Smoke looked up at the man coming in the cafe, who seemed to be about as broad as he was tall. His prominent gut extended in front of him like the prow of a ship. He wore a dusty black suit, but nobody was ever going to mistake him for a preacher. His moon-shaped face bore too many marks of dissipation and decadence for that. His head was bald under a black derby, and a red beard stuck out from his jaw like a brush.
Well, well, Joe, this is the busiest I've seen your place in a long time. If you keep it up, you might last another 2 months before you go broke, instead of just one.
What can I do for you, Mr. McKendry?
You know what you can do for me. Sell out to me like a reasonable man.
If I do that, you'll be one step closer to owning the whole town.
Why shouldn't I own it? I founded it, didn't I?
That doesn't mean you've got a right to own everything.
That's exactly what it means. Well, you'll come around eventually. They always do.
The man's piggish eyes swung towards Smoke.
Who's this?
I didn't ask his name.
I'm Smoke Jensen, Mr. McKendry. My spread is on the other side of Gunsight Ridge.
Jensen? Oh, I know who you are, Mr. Jensen. I know quite well. What brings you to our little town?
I'm on the trail of some stolen cattle. The rustlers brought them here this morning and already sold them to somebody. You, maybe.
Do you know who you're talking to, sir?
The biggest man around these parts, I'm guessing.
In more ways than one. I'm Oliver McKendry. Bitter Springs is my town.
Then you must know everything that goes on around here. You're probably mixed up in it as well, neck deep.
Be careful, Jensen. I don't take kindly to being accused of rustling.
I don't take kindly to having my cattle stolen. If you didn't have anything to do with it, you don't have to be concerned, do you?
McKendry just glared at him without saying anything. Then he looked at the counterman again.
Remember what I told you, Joe. I'll pay you a fair price for this place, and you can start over somewhere else. You could even stay on and run it for me, if you like.
I don't reckon that's gonna happen.
McKendry shrugged and turned away. With one last hostile glance at Smoke, he waddled out of the cafe.
No offense, Mr. Jensen, but if I was you, I'd saddle up and ride out of Bitter Springs. McKendry's got some tough hombres working for him.
So do I.
Yeah, but I'm talking about professional gun throwers. I've heard plenty about you. I know you're supposed to be mighty fast with a gun, but all of McKendry's men are. Maybe not as fast as you, but probably faster than those fellas you've got with you. No offense.
What about those cows I was talking about, Joe?
Some fellas drove them up and held them a little way outside of town. A couple of shady cattle buyers hang around McKendry's saloon sometimes, and one of them happened to be there. He made a deal with the men who brought in the cattle. Some of them went along with the herd, and the buyer hired a few local boys as punchers, too. They're on their way to Denver right now.
What about the rest of the men who brought in the cattle?
I reckon they're still over at the saloon.
Thanks.
You're going over there, aren't you? There's going to be gunplay.
That'll be up to the men I want to talk to. If they tell me what I want to know, there doesn't have to be any shooting.
You, wouldn't mind paying for the meal before you go over there, would you?
We'll finish eating, and you'll get paid, Joe. Don't worry about that.
Charles Kingston started gathering up his papers, tapping them against the tablecloth to square up the edges.
You're a brave man, Mr. Jensen. I've only been around here for a while, but long enough to know that Oliver McKendry is a bad man to cross.
You're leaving?
Going to my hotel room to double-check some of my calculations. Gunfire makes it rather difficult to concentrate on mathematics.
Yeah, I reckon it would. I didn't know there was a hotel in this town.
The proprietor of the deluxe saloon rents out a couple of rooms in the back. I'm sure Mr. McKendry will buy him out soon, too. And then the policy may change.
Kingston looked over at the man in the sombrero.
Come on, Esteban.
The man stirred slowly, sat up, and thumbed back the sombrero, revealing a brown, dull-featured face.
Si, senor.
The two of them left the cafe. Smoke finished his coffee, still wondering about Kingston's motives. Pearly sat down beside him, and Cal joined him, turning a chair around so he could straddle it.
That fella Kingston's a mite suspicious, Smoke. He must have been the one who uncovered the tunnel.
Yeah, but Mr. McKendry seemed a lot more like the sort of fella to be ramrodding a gang of rustlers. I'm not sure a bunch of owl hoots would ever listen to somebody like Dr. Kingston.
I'll take a stroll over to the saloon once everybody's finished eating. That might give us some answers.
Or some hot lead, anyway.
You can tell a lot by who decides to shoot at you.
A short time later, after all the Sugarloaf cowboys were finished with their meals, Smoke paid the proprietor for the food and coffee.
We'll be seeing you, Joe.
I surely do hope so, Mr. Jensen.
The group stepped out of the cafe.
The rest of you boys stay here for a minute. I'll go over to the saloon by myself. If I make it there all right, you can come ahead then.
You mean you're gonna slap a big old target right on your chest? You ain't going out in that street alone, Smoke. No disrespect, but that just ain't happening.
All right, let's go. Everybody keep your eyes open.
The two men stepped out of the shade of the cafe's awning and into the bright afternoon sun. Smoke's eyes narrowed against the glare. His vision adjusted quickly, though, and within a few steps, he could see just fine. That allowed him to spot a tiny reflection from the window built into the saloon's false front when he and Pearly were more than halfway across the street.
Smoke?
I see it. Better split up.
Now!
They darted away from each other, Smoke going right and Pearly going left. Powder smoke spurted from the window in the false front. Without having to discuss it, Smoke and Pearly charged straight toward the enemy. The saloon's front window shattered, spraying glass over the boardwalk as gunmen opened fire inside the building. Muzzle flame jetted over the bat wings as well. Smoke drew his Colt as he ran and tipped the barrel up to fire from the hip. Three slugs smashed through the boards of the false front. The bushwhacker dropped his rifle through the opening as he rose up. Then he slumped forward and hung over the windowsill with his arms dangling. Smoke dived toward the boardwalk. It was raised a couple of feet off the ground, and when he rolled up against it, the thick planks offered him some protection from the would-be killers inside the saloon. A glance told him that Pearly had done the same thing on the other side of the single step leading up from the street. After the first few seconds, the men inside the saloon were too busy ducking to try to get a shot at Smoke or Pearly anyway. Cal and the other Sugarloaf punchers had opened fire too, sending a volley of lead smashing into the front of the saloon. Some of them retreated into the cafe, while others took cover behind water troughs, barrels, and a parked wagon. The men in the saloon weren't going to give up without a fight. Smoke and Pearly lay there against the boardwalk's base. Scores of slugs sizzled through the air a few feet above them, going in both directions. Smoke caught Pearly's eye and pointed toward the corners of the building. The foreman nodded in understanding. He started crawling toward the corner on his side. Smoke did likewise on his side. When he reached the corner, the angle was bad for the men holed up in the saloon. Smoke was able to leap up and dash along the side of the building. There was a door back here and some horses tied up under a couple of scrubby trees. He was about 10 feet from the door when it burst open and a couple of men charged out holding guns. They were taking off for the tall and uncut. They forgot about fleeing when they spotted Smoke hurrying along the side of the building. Instead, they twisted toward him, and their guns came up spouting flame. Smoke's rounds landed, one in a rustler's heart, the other in another's belly. That emptied Smoke's Colt, so he stepped forward quickly and kicked away their weapons. The one he'd shot in the chest was already dead, while the gut-shot man was in too much agony to care about anything else. Smoke put his back against the wall of the building and thumbed fresh shells into his gun while keeping an eye on the door. No one else came out that way. Smoke knew the Pearly was doing some business over there.
Smoke! Smoke, are you all right?
Smoke didn't answer right away. Instead, he went through the door into the saloon. He ducked around the corner, going in low and fast with his Colt ready to fire. But there was no need. Four men were sprawled on the floor in bloody disarray, including the one Smoke had seen watching them when they rode into town. From a busted window on the other side of the room, Pearly caught Smoke's attention.
You all right, Smoke?
Fine. You down these men from the window?
Couple of them. The other two were already ventilated by our fellas across the street.
For God's sake, Jensen, don't shoot anymore.
Smoke looked over and saw Oliver McKendry peeking at him over the top of the bar, where the town boss had taken cover when the bullets started flying.
Not so brave now that all your hired guns are dead, are you, McKendry?
They're not my hired guns. My men all took off when the shooting started. They said this wasn't their fight.
McKendry got to his feet and wiped anxious sweat from his face.
I may have been mixed up in some shady business now and then in my life, but I'm not a rustler, Jensen. I swear it. And I didn't have anything to do with those men opening fire on you. Sure, I let them drink here, but what the hell else was I going to do?
It was a little surprising, but Smoke found himself believing McKendry. Tough gunmen like the hombre scattered around the room in various attitudes of death usually drank wherever they damned well wanted to. But if McKendry wasn't behind the rustling, that left only one real suspect. Smoke went to the bat wings, but before pushing him open, he called out.
Cal! Hold your fire! I'm coming out!
By this time, Cal and the other hands had emerged from cover and were gathered across the street. Pearly waved them over, and they all joined Smoke in the front of the saloon.
I reckon we busted up this bunch of wide loopers all right.
We still need to round up the boss.
It's not McKendry?
I don't think so. Go drag those bodies out. This town's too small to have an undertaker, so I reckon we'll have to plant them ourselves.
Smoke started walking toward the Deluxe Saloon, Bitter Springs' other drinking establishment.
Where are you going?
To finish the job.
Smoke was not going in the saloon's front door. Instead, he headed around to the back. That was where those rented rooms Kingston had mentioned were located. And that was where he expected to find the man he pegged as the ringleader of the rustlers. He eased open a narrow door at the rear of the saloon. The short hallway just inside was dim. Two doors opened on the corridor, one on each side. They were both closed when Smoke stepped in. Then, a door on the right was thrown open and a figure rushed out.
Senor Jensen, look out! Dr. Kingston, he is...
Esteban jerked a knife from under his serape. Smoke used the Colt's barrel to turn aside the knife. Smoke's knockout punch landed true. The Esteban bounced off the wall and landed limply on the floor at Smoke's feet, out cold. Smoke looked into the room Esteban had come from. He saw Dr. Charles Kingston lying on the floor, and for a moment, he figured the geologist was dead. He checked, though, and he found that Kingston was still breathing. He had a good-sized lump on his head where Esteban had knocked him out with a gun or some other blunt instrument. Pearly stuck his head in the door.
All over now?
Yep, except for trying to get those stolen cattle back.
By nightfall, Smoke had all the details. A sore-headed Dr. Kingston supplied most of them as they sat in the Bitter Springs Cafe. A Kendry saloon was closed for repairs, and probably would be for a while.
Esteban had to boast a little before he knocked me unconscious. I never knew his last name until today. It's La Roca. Esteban La Roca.
Sounds familiar. He used to run with a bunch of outlaws down in Texas, I believe.
That's right. Actually, he was their leader until the Rangers got on their trail and he came up here to Colorado to lie low for a while. And those are the men he recruited to come up here and start rustling your cattle, Mr. Jensen. I'm sorry about that. But when I saw that old riverbed running through the ridge, it never occurred to me that someone might employ it for that purpose.
But once Esteban explored it on his own and found out that it ran all the way through the ridge, he figured out right away how to put it to use.
Indeed. I honestly never thought he had the wits for such a thing.
I imagine that's just what he wanted you and everybody else to think.
What made you suspect him?
I just couldn't bring myself to believe that you were behind the rustling, Doctor. No offense, but you're just too much of a tenderfoot.
I'll take that as a compliment, I suppose. What are you going to do now?
McKendry was spooked enough after getting his place shot up that he was willing to give me the name of that crooked cattle buyer who took my herd to Denver. I plan to go after him and get either the cattle or the money and see the rest of this bunch behind bars.
I suspect you'll do it, too.
You fellas need refills on your coffee?
That'd be good.
Before Joe could bring over the coffee pot, though, Pearly and Cal came into the cafe and they had a familiar figure with them. Monty Carson, the sheriff of Big Rock.
Monty, what are you doing up here?
I practically wore out a horse getting here today after a rider from your ranch brought your message to me. A telegram for you came in early this morning. I figured you'd want to see it right away.
The sheriff took a piece of paper from his pocket and held it out. Smoke took the yellow telegraph flimsy and unfolded it. He sat up sharply as he read the words printed on it in block letters.
Trouble, Smoke.
You could say that. Pearly, you take everybody but Cal and go after that herd. If you don't catch up to it by the time you get to Denver, you have to bring the law in on the deal.
Sure, Smoke.
What about me, Smoke? Am I going with you, wherever it is you're going?
No, you're headed back to the Sugarloaf. Don't think you've got an easy job, though. You'll have to tell Sally it looks like I'm going to be gone longer than I thought I would be.
Smoke stood up, folded the telegram, and stuck it in his shirt pocket.
What is it, Smoke?
Preacher's in trouble. Looks like it might be the Indian ring again.
Buffalo Crossing wasn't a bad-looking little town. Matt Jensen took in the broad main street and false-fronted businesses as he rode into the settlement. Despite his young age, Matt had done a lot of drifting already, and he'd seen dozens of towns like this one. Some of the buildings were more substantial, including a hotel with two stories, several saloons, a big general mercantile, and an actual red brick building that housed the bank. Unlike a lot of cow towns that had an insubstantial look about them, Buffalo Crossing was beginning to develop a sense of permanence about it. Matt might even stay here for a while, but not for too long. That just wasn't Mad Jensen's style. He angled his horse toward the hitch rack in front of the fancily named Hanrahan's Drinking and Gaming Establishment, which of course meant that it was a saloon. And the name was really just about the only thing fancy about it as far as Matt could see. Matt swung down from the saddle and looped the horse's reins around the rack. He was a tall, broad-shouldered young man in his 20s, wearing a black Stetson pushed back on his fair hair and a blue bib-front shirt. A Colt 44 double-action revolver rode easily in a holster on his right hip. On his left hip was a sheathed bowie knife with a staghorn grip. He stepped up onto the boardwalk and was just about to push through the bat wings into Hanrahan's place. A bit of fast motion seen from the corner of his eye caught Matt's attention. Turning his head to look, he saw that a young woman had come out of the building next to the saloon and was pacing back and forth with an agitated attitude that says she was upset about something. Matt had thought she was just a kid at first glance, but a closer look revealed that while she might be small, she was a full-grown woman with a woman's curves under the jeans and flannel shirt. Rich auburn hair fell in waves around her shoulders, and when she turned so that her face was toward him, he saw a light dusting of freckles across her cheeks. She paid no attention to the tall stranger standing in front of the saloon. Instead, she swung around and continued pacing. Matt started to head on into the saloon, going so far as to rest his left hand on the bat wings to swing one side open. But then he stopped, giving in to an impulse, and went along the boardwalk. The young woman turned again to come back toward him, and now that he was closer, he could tell that she had green eyes that went very well with the freckles and the red hair. She took more notice of him this time, too, frowning for a second before she turned away. Matt read the lettering on the window of the building from which the redhead had emerged, Laramie Stage Line. In smaller letters under that was Buffalo Crossing Station, and in still smaller letters, E.A. Hanrahan, Station Manager. Just past the office was a barn that no doubt also belonged to the stagecoach line. As Matt propped his shoulder against one of the posts holding up the awning over the boardwalk, a skinny old-timer in overalls and a battered hat limped out of the barn's open doors.
"Well, Miss Emily, there ain't no use getting yourself all worked up into a state just yet. We don't know what your pa's gonna find out there. We got to hope for the best."
"We know good and well what he's gonna find. The stage has been held up again. We can only pray that Wes and Tobe haven't been killed."
Matt did not like the sound of that. He straightened from his casual pose. Redhead's eyes darted toward him.
"Well, you just gonna stand there, or do you have something to say?"
"Didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I couldn't help but hear about your trouble, ma'am. I'm sorry."
"It's Miss, not ma'am. Are you in the habit of going around offering condolences to strangers?" "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. I'm just upset right now, that's all."
"Sounds like you got a right to be. I've ridden shotgun on stagecoaches before. It's not much I hate more than road agents."
"You're a shotgun guard? You wouldn't be looking for work, would you?"
"No, I'm afraid not."
"You'll forgive my asking. You heard enough to know that we've been having problems with bandits. Several of our employees have been killed in gunfights with the outlaws. Shoot, I don't even know you."
"Matt Jensen, miss. It's a pleasure. I just wish I was making your acquaintance under better circumstances."
"Oh, you're a charmer, aren't you? I know your type."
"Well, I didn't mean to..."
"No need to apologize. I don't suppose you can help it. I'm immune, though. By the way, I'm Emily Ann Hanrahan. And yes, I know it rhymes."
"Emily Ann, as in E.A. Hanrahan, station manager?"
"That's right. Do you have a problem with that, Mr. Jensen?"
"No, ma'am. I mean, Miss Hanrahan. I reckon you're related to whoever owns Hanrahan's drinking and gaming establishment? Or do you run it, too?"
"It's my father's. He owns this building and the barn, too, and has the contract with the stage line, but he's given me free rein to run the station. Not that any of this is your business, Mr. Jensen."
"No, it's not. I was just curious, that's all. Some folks might say it's one of my failings."
"Here comes the stage!"
Matt and Emily both turned to look toward the eastern end of town, where a big Concord stagecoach was rolling toward the station with a saddle horse tied to the back and trailing along behind it. The coach was painted red with yellow trim and brass fittings, although the thick layer of dust that coated it muted the colors and dulled the shine. A large, beefy man in a brown tweed suit was on the box, handling the team. He wasn't wearing a hat, which revealed that he had thinning gray hair.
Oh, no. I don't see Wesson Toe.
Well, now that don't have to mean nothing. Could be they're riding inside.
They wouldn't be riding inside unless they were hurt. Even if he was hurt, Wes wouldn't let somebody else handle his team unless...
The coach drew quite a bit of attention as it came along the street. Several people trotted after it on foot. The driver guided the coach directly to the station and brought the team to a halt in front of the barn.
Seamus, what about Wes and Tobe?
The man jerked his head toward the passenger compartment. The old hostler sprang over to the coach's door with an agility that belied the limp Matt had seen earlier. He twisted the catch to open it. When he did so, an arm fell out and dangled limply. Matt could see where blood had run down over the hand at the end of that arm and dried, leaving a grim trail.
Tope.
I and Wes is in there too, lass. Both gone.
For a second, Matt saw tears shine in Emily's green eyes. But then she gave a determined shake of her head, and the tears were gone. Although her fair complexion was a bit paler than it had been a moment earlier, her face was composed and determined. The big man climbed down wearily from the box. When his feet hit the ground, he seemed to notice Matt for the first time.
You, did you have anything to do with this? Because if you did, I'll tear you limb from limb, as the good Lord is my witness.
The man clenched big, blocky fist and took a step toward Matt. Emily laid a hand on his arm.
Take it easy, Seamus. This fella just rode into town. He didn't seem to have any idea what's been going on around here.
Aye, and that's just what the villain would want you to think, isn't it?
Listen, Mr. Hanrahan, your daughter's right. I had no idea you were having trouble with outlaws. I just found out about it when I heard her talking to this old fella.
Named Ezekiel, like the hombre in the Bible.
Give me one good reason why I should believe you, Boyle.
I don't have any reason to lie. I just got here, like your daughter said.
And we have no proof of that now, do we?
At that moment, the crowd that had gathered around the stagecoach parted to let a newcomer through. The man was medium height and stocky, with a gray mustache. A badge was pinned to his vest.
What happened, Seamus? One of your coaches get hit again?
Aye. A puncher rode into town and told Emily that he'd seen the coach stopped up in Tomahawk Pass. Said it looked like there'd been trouble, so I rode out to check.
I should have gone. It was my responsibility. I knew the coach was late.
Blast it! Why doesn't anybody come and tell me about these things? I'm supposed to be in charge of keeping the peace around here.
Well, when it comes to these holdups, you haven't done a very good job of it lately, have you? If you really want to do something, you'll arrest this fella and make him talk. He's part of the gang.
That's the first I've heard about it. Why have you got it in your head that I'm an outlaw?
Because I don't know you, and you come sniffing round my daughter trying to worm information out of her like a no-good spy.
You've jumped to a conclusion that's all wrong, Mr. Hanrahan.
I don't believe I've seen you in Buffalo Crossing before, mister. Mind telling me who you are and what you're doing here?
My name's Matt Jensen. As for what I'm doing here, I'm just passing through. This looks like a nice little town, and I was thinking about spending a few days here before I drift on, but now I'm not so sure. Place doesn't seem quite as friendly anymore.
Matt Jensen, you say?
That's right.
You know the name, do you, Sheriff? The young Scot's wanted by the law, isn't he?
On the contrary. As far as I've ever heard, Matt Jensen's always been on the side of the law. He even received a commendation from the governor of Colorado a while back for rescuing a young woman and busting up an outlaw gang. Am I remembering that right, Mr. Jensen?
Close enough.
Not only that, but his brother is Smoke Jensen.
That's all well and good, but we got no way of knowing this young scalawag is telling the truth about being Matt Jensen.
That's how he introduced himself to me before you got back to town. Not sure why he would have any reason to lie about it.
I remember seeing pictures in the paper when they had that celebration down in Denver I was talking about. This is Matt Jensen, all right, Seamus, and I doubt very seriously if he's mixed up with a gang of stagecoach robbers and killers.
Maybe not. But what was I supposed to think when I come back into town and find a stranger talking to me daughter?
He could tell I was upset, and he asked me what it was all about. That's all, Seamus.
All right, now that we've got all that settled, tell me what happened, Seamus.
The lawman's face was grim as he looked through the coach's open door.
I see they got Tobe and poor old Wes.
Aye. Wes was still on the driver's box, and Tobe was lying beside the coach. Both dead. Shot up pretty bad. I found the strongbox on the ground nearby, empty. They'd busted the lock off it with a shovel or a pick, something like that. The filthy buzzards.
What about the passengers?
No passengers on this run, and thank the Lord for that. Although, for the company's sake, I hate to see folks afraid to ride the stage.
A man in the crowd spoke up.
You can't really blame them for feeling that way, Seamus. With those killers on the loose, it might be worth a man's life these days to ride the stage. If I was married, I sure wouldn't let my wife and kids ride it either.
Were they carrying something valuable in the strongbox, Seamus?
Well, I'll come to your office and make a full report, Thomas.
Hanrahan took hold of the dead man's dangling arm and lifted it carefully to place it back inside the coach.
First, though, I have to see to having these poor lads tended to properly.
Sure, come to the office whenever you're ready. In the meantime, Mr. Jensen, it'd be my pleasure to buy you a drink.
And it would be my pleasure to accept, Sheriff.